Hello, and welcome to the Fundraising in a Pandemic, Where to Pivot and Persist webinar, presented by Polsinelli, CCS Fundraising, Silicon Valley Community Foundation, and the University of Pennsylvania Gift Planning. Today's webinar is being recorded and will be available for replay within 24 hours on the Polsinelli website. Please use the Q&A box to submit questions to our speakers throughout today's webinar. Any questions not covered during the webinar will be addressed directly after the program via email. If you experience any technical difficulties, please type your question into the Q&A box and our engineer can assist you. I would now like to turn the webinar over to Polsinelli shareholder and Strategic Nonprofit Solutions Chair, Andrew Grimet.
Thanks, Meg. Hello. It goes without saying that we are living in a time of great change and hopefully awakening. Every conversation I've had most recently has invoked a wide range of emotions beyond anything I've ever seen or experienced in my lifetime. As leaders in the nonprofit community, we have unique insight into our communities. With that insight comes the challenge and an opportunity to make the world a better place. What each of us chooses to do with those opportunities is in our own control. I have great faith in the desire of our community. I sincerely hope that as we continue down this road, we truly effectuate change. The old adage that with each generation, things improve is not good enough. We must do better than that. With that, today we would like to continue the conversation about fundraising in a pandemic, where to pivot and persist. With all that is happening today, I think this topic is of great importance as we engage with our communities. I'm here today with an amazing team of professionals who will introduce themselves in a moment. As you know, I am the practice leader of the nonprofit practice group at Polsinelli. With that, I'd like to pass off to Kendra Onishi from the Silicon Valley Community Foundation.
Hello, everyone from the West Coast. My name is Kendra Onishi. I am the Vice President of Development for Silicon Valley Community Foundation. As a community foundation, SBCF partners with individuals, families, and corporations to manage and facilitate their philanthropy. We also, through our own discretionary grant-making, support nonprofits working throughout our region to address our community's most pressing issues and work to engage our donors and local public officials and leaders towards creating a more equitable and sustainable community for all. I'm looking forward to the conversation today, and with that, I'd like to pass it to my colleague, John.
Tom?
Andrew, it's Tom Kassane. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank you, Tom. Got worried there.
Not at all. Thanks, folks. Nice to speak to everybody. Apologize for that little technicality there. Really delighted to join Lynn and Kendra. I represent CCS. We are a national consulting firm that works with virtually every type of nonprofit organizations, and we have been extraordinarily gratified, as you say it, Andrew, in terms of the pivoting and persistence of the nonprofit community. What we've witnessed over the past 3 months has been extremely inspiring. And we work very closely with nonprofit leaders and development personnel and boards of trustees in this work. So it's, again, a privilege to share the stage with Lynn and Kendra.
Thank you, Tom. And Lynn.
Good afternoon. This is Lynn Malzone-Iorardi. I am from the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League research institution in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I have been serving as Director of Gift Planning at the University of Pennsylvania since 2005. And I also serve as an independent consultant with my own firm, Gift Planning Advisor. So my focus is clearly gift planning, but I'm looking forward to the conversation today, hearing from Kendra and hearing from Tom about what they're seeing across the country, and I look forward to sharing with you what we're seeing at the University of Pennsylvania and among our constituents.
Great. With that, Tom, why don't you lead us off and talk to us a little bit about what you're seeing in the overall landscape across the U.S.?
Happy to, Andrew. And thanks so much again, folks. As a fundraising consultant, I can't offer a webinar without 700 pages of data. And so it took me weeks to shrink this down to 5 or 6 slides. But I wanted to share with the group 3 key indicators representing what we have witnessed over the past 10 or 11 weeks. I think some of us are all webinared out as we focused on trying to get a better understanding of what to confront, of what we've learned in the past. But as we recognize that COVID-19, national unrest, has presented entirely 2 new challenges, what we've learned a lot over the past 3 months. First and foremost, what we had hoped for is what we're witnessing, which is an extraordinary and encouraging philanthropic response. This chart indicates that there's been $10 billion. It's north of $11.5 billion in global support from charitable foundations, from responsible companies, from individual philanthropists, from crowdsourcing and collaborative initiatives, which is extraordinary. They focused on those organizations that they cherish the most and naturally are looking at high priority initiatives, including the work that the country has been doing to meet the demand and to meet the crisis, the healthcare crisis, focusing on the work of our hospitals, human service organizations, our first responders. It is just extraordinary. Secondly, there was a report that was offered by Fidelity. This report is about 5 weeks old. They anticipate a follow-up report. And this looks at a survey that was conducted of donors. So this is a reaction by individuals, not nonprofits themselves, about their giving behavior and how they anticipate giving over the next several months. This is encouraging. There's some promise here, folks. What you'll note are 2 important data points. That 79%, 25% will donate more, and more than half will donate at the same levels over the next several months and the rest of 2020. So nearly 8 in 10 individuals that responded are going to stay the course and remain resilient in their giving. Secondly, what you'll see is that the data tells us that folks are resilient, but they're also pivoting to organizations that have a particular interest in being impacted by COVID-19, and that's just not hospitals and human services. Those are higher education institutions that are preparing for a different landscape in the next semester. It's cultural institutions and faith-based organizations that have a visitor experience that need to be adjusted, as well as a whole host of other nonprofit organizations where COVID-19 has adversely impacted their trajectory. The next slide focuses on the institutions themselves, the nonprofit sector. This is a survey that our firm, CCS, conducted and was published about 5 weeks ago. We intend to do a follow-up survey midsummer. And what you'll see here is a response by more than 1,200 participants representing development and executive leaders from around the country and representing all nonprofit sectors. It shows the impact on fundraising so far this year, an anticipation of fundraising for the rest of the year, and what the nonprofits are doing to change or modify their work. As expected, although individual donors will remain resilient, there's been decline. Now, there's no surprise there. Some of it has been more significant than others. Secondly, they anticipate that for the second half of the year. So they don't anticipate a massive or V-shaped philanthropic recovery for the second half of the year. But fortunately, they are being smart and thoughtful in terms of their fundraising appeals, expanding some, maintaining those. The visibility on special events, as we all know, is challenging. But direct appeals to top donors, to stakeholders, to board members is critical. So as you see here on the next slide, here's a bit of a sentiment, okay? And the sentiment shows 2 things. One is the prioritized strategies, which would be appeals to all stakeholders, direct appeal to major donors, and an extraordinary attempt at social media, which is extremely important, not just to drive revenue to these organizations today and in the coming months, but to evergreen and to tether donors to the organization more thoughtfully to demonstrate the impact that we've witnessed. Second thing is how quickly the nonprofits moved to special appeals. In some organizations, it was naturally sustainability funds or operational necessities. Others was a direct response to COVID-19. Similarly, in 2008 and 2009, we saw major adjustments in philanthropy. We're witnessing the same response by foundations and corporations in terms of responsibility. And so what they're doing is they're looking at how they're declaring the narrative. How are they adjusting, quote, the case for support? And so many organizations that were steadfast in approaching their donors with a particular appeal or case for support have adjusted and adjusted significantly. Campaigns, most are continuing. There are some that have slowed down. Campaigns are defined by multi-year objectives over and above annual fundraising. So the proven guidelines that we've presented, and this is my final slide before handing it on to Kendra, are working, which is increased communication and regular communication. So if you've communicated back at the end of March and again in April, but if you've been reluctant to communicate in May and June, we'd highly encourage you to do that. But encourage it through impact, what's happened over the past 10 years, and trumpet the fact that fundraising has been successful. Number two, increase the activity. We're in a competitive space. Number three, we would encourage you to be as resilient as you possibly can and avoid wholesale cancellations. That's the difference, though, when it comes to events, because we don't have control over many of those events due to social distancing. Short-term plans. So when we thought about this in March, we were thinking of 90-day plans, 120-day plans. That didn't work. It's a 30-day cycle. And then finally, your missions are valuable, they're critical, and your major stakeholders cherish them. So reaffirm your mission. What you did before, the good ideas that you're presenting, the solutions that you're uncovering are absolutely critical to continue to cement and tether your donors to your particular organization. So there is great resiliency. There's great work in terms of pivoting, and we've witnessed it in many different areas. And what I'd like to do is ask Kendra then to give us a sense of her experience in the work that she's doing out in the West Coast and the rest of the country. Thanks, folks.
Thank you, Tom. So I would like to say that as a community foundation, SBCF is in a unique space where we are both responding to the crisis through collaboration with our philanthropic government and corporate partners. And because we are a sponsoring organization for donor advised funds, we also are able to gain insight on how individual and corporate donors are shifting their giving priorities during the crisis. One thing I do want to highlight is that what you'll see here in the next few slides is that a number of trends that we're seeing were also detailed in Tom's presentation. We work with over 2,000 individual and corporate donors, and we typically grant out about $1 billion each year in grants, but we have seen some changes due to the crisis and the response of our donors and the rest of the philanthropic community. So one thing I want to highlight is the work that we are doing. So since March, SBCF has led multiple efforts in the Bay Area, coordinating with philanthropic government and corporate partners. We've opened up 7 different collaborative funds. These are cross-sector efforts to respond to the pandemic and its impact in our region. We are working with each of these funds, with local lead human service agencies, with our colleague Bay Area Community Foundations, leading community development financial institutions, and local county agencies and jurisdictions. Through these funds, we've raised roughly $50 million in donations and commitments for community support. In addition to the funds that we have been raising in collaboration with our local partners, our individual donors have been giving heavily related to the COVID crisis. Since February, our donors have given out over $140 million in grants specifically tagged or related to the COVID crisis. The top sectors that our donors are supporting include health, human services, and education, so very similar to what some of the trends Tom presented. Another unique feature that I wanted to highlight is a significant proportion of the grants that we've seen have been to U.S.-based charities responding to the crisis. So only $1 million of the $142 million that were connected to the pandemic went to organizations abroad. This is somewhat unique in the sense that while we are a community foundation that is dedicated to supporting Silicon Valley, our donors who live in the region are diverse and come from all over the country and the world to live and work. We have companies that we partner with, and while their headquarters may be based in Silicon Valley, often they have domestic offices or international offices. And so their giving usually reflects their footprint. So this is a very unique kind of situation that we're seeing. I will also note that DC, after California, received the most in pandemic-related grants outside of California. And this was primarily because of the heavy giving to organizations such as the CDC Foundation. The other thing I want to highlight is that of all of the grants that we've given out in the past few months that were related to COVID, about half of them went to our Bay Area, and half of that came from the seven funds that we have been working with in collaboration with our partners. In general, there has been an increase in giving, and so this, I think, really highlights to Tom's point of organizations, individual philanthropists, companies continuing to give to the organizations that they care the most about, but also making sure that they're also giving in new ways to respond to the crisis. So one thing I want to highlight is that while a majority of donors are continuing to give to the organizations they care about, they're also giving to new nonprofits and new pandemic-related initiatives as a response. The other thing I wanted to highlight is that we've seen other types of trends, one of which is the flexibility in grant making. So in mid-March, the Council on Foundations announced that more than 40 major U.S.-based international organizations were going to commit to offering flexible funding to their grantees to meet the emergency needs. So this commitment includes loosening or eliminating restrictions on current grants, making new unrestricted grants, reducing or postponing reporting requirements or site visits or the like, and a commitment to communicate, listen, and support their grantees through this emergency. Since March, we have converted over 138 grants from program specific to general operating support, and that has resulted in over $14 million in unrestricted funding for our current grantees. We've also provided no-cost extensions and allowing for extensions for reporting and expenditures, but also removed or reduced grant reporting requirements. So this has been in direct response to our grantees' requests, but also some of our fund holders coming to us and wanting to reduce restrictions or increase flexibility for the grantees that they're already supporting. The other thing that I wanted to highlight is we've also seen a significant shift in corporate response. So we've seen shifting priorities. Companies are giving to areas that they did not previously declare as a focus area for them. So there's been an increase in local giving, also direct support for individuals and families, which is not as common in the corporate space, and prioritizing new topics such as racial justice or support for underserved communities. Corporations have also funded and worked together to create funding coalitions as a response. One I want to highlight is the Pledge 1% partnership that brought together 25 Bay Area companies and gave out $22 million in funding. So these companies are coming together and thinking through how they can work together to support the community during this time. Another thing to highlight is employee giving. Companies are promoting their employees to support the nonprofits and the issues that they care about through platforms such as Benevity, Your Cause, and Bright Funds. SVCS, just in the last few months, have received over 6,000 individual contributions totaling $1.8 million in grant and funding for community support. And the last piece that I wanted to highlight is that there's also new and interesting ways that companies are reaching out and supporting the community. They're donating Wi-Fi hotspots, they're donating personal protective equipment and medical supplies, Zoom accounts, anything that they can offer to really support the community during this time. So the, as Tom mentioned, the response and the shifts that we've seen have been really, really amazing, really eye-opening. And with that, I'd like to hand it to Lynn to discuss what she's seeing at the University of Pennsylvania.
Thanks, Kendra. I mentioned at the beginning in the introduction that I'm at the University of Pennsylvania. So what I'd like to do is share a little bit of what we're seeing at Penn. As I mentioned, we are a large research-based institution. We have about 10,000 undergrad students and about the same 10,000 in graduate students. We are a very, very large healthcare system with multiple hospitals and outward-facing medical care. But at the same time, I hesitate to point out how big we are because I want to also emphasize that we are a centralized but decentralized organization, which means that our schools and centers across the university are responsible for their own budget. And we have the healthcare system, we have a medical school, a nursing school, a dental school, a veterinary school, but we also have several art and culture-based centers. And there, by analogy, these are like smaller nonprofits within the university, and they have